TNT Radio wants to know what you really think, because your opinion matters. At TNTRadio.live, upload a video, some audio, or drop us a note on TNT Radio's Soapbox. Today's news talk, TNT Radio. No propaganda, no lies, and definitely no BS. You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome to the show, and we're at the top of the week. I hope you had a great weekend. Now, I want to start out going with the big story that's been in the news all weekend, which was the killing of Tyre Nichols. And honestly, there can only be one collection of responses. Horror, disgust, outrage, and a lot of questions. How could this have happened? And how could cops be this bad? And that's where we start. Now, the one part of this that we throw away right away is the issue of race. The cops that brutalized Tyre Nichols were also black. And if we throw out politics, I mean, I think it's very shameful for, you know, Democrats to be saying that these cops were racist when they're not. They're black cops in a black neighborhood. Now, at this point, we can only know part of what happened. And we know that some of the members of the police department that responded to this were from a police unit known as Scorpion, or Street Crimes Operation to Restore Peace in Our Neighborhoods, which is an incredible misnomer in this case. Now, this all started with a traffic stop that the Memphis Police Department said was due to Nichols' reckless driving, but they haven't been able to find any evidence of that. And they're kind of backpedaling, going back and forth on this. So what we're looking at is members of a police unit who specialize in violent crime. They actually weren't supposed to be doing traffic stops. And it says a lot about the mentality that's crept into the police departments. Now, part of this has to do, honestly, with defunding police. The cream of the crop is going to leave and go do something else, honestly. Training goes down, morale is down, everything's down, and it's no excuse. You see, that there's no excuse for police doing this to anybody. It doesn't matter what their race is or whatever. And I'm emphasizing that for the second, because that's off the table. This is a young man that, you know, it shouldn't have happened. Now, the way the story, the narrative is running, is officers pushed Nichols to the ground after the traffic stop. They got him out of the car, threatened to tase him, push him to the ground. For whatever reason, a struggle began between the officers and Nichols, and they attempted to pin him to the ground. They threatened him, swore at him. They used pepper spray and a taser on him. And the pepper spray also hit one of the other officers. Now, this might have incited one of the officers, and he lost it. And that could have actually been the start of this, because mishandling pepper spray, and they started taking it out on Nichols. That's a possibility. It's not an excuse. Now, Nichols broke free, and he was pursued by at least two officers. He made it about 800 yards, and they grabbed him again. And that's when they started beating him down for real. Now, they're claiming that Nichols reached for their weapons, and it's not substantiated by any of the videos, and none of the officers said anything or did anything to indicate they were threatened. They weren't communicating that Nichols was reaching for their weapons during the stop. Now, what the hell is this? And here's where we're at. Now, in a few minutes, we're going to go to the news segment with Dede Denslow. And I want you to think about this story, because there's a lot to unpack here, even with limited information. Five big cops. They look like power lifters compared to this kid. And he's honestly, kid, you know, he might be early 20s, but a kid. My God. So we're going to pick this up in a few minutes. And right now, what we'd like to know is if you're enjoying listening to TNT Radio, and do you think we're doing a good job? Please let us know. Why not leave us a like or a positive review or comment on Facebook, Gab, or Getter, and help us get the word out as we cover the biggest topics of our time on today's TNT Talk. TNT Radio.
Keeping you updated on the latest.
In the car while I'm driving home.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Now we're back with TNT producer and talk show host Dede Denslow. And we're going to talk about the civilians killed in another Ukrainian HIMARS strike. Dede, welcome. What can you tell us about this?
All right, George. I hope you had a good weekend. The sun is out in the UK, which is quite nice. It's getting lighter in the mornings. Yeah, another attack. It's been blamed on Ukrainian forces, or at least by the Russians. And it's a HIMARS, an American weapon system that was used. The US-made weapon system was used in an attack that left four people dead in Russia's Zaporizhia region, Evgeny Belatsky said. Ukrainian forces shelled a railway bridge near the city of Melitopol in Russia's Zaporizhia region. The acting governor, Evgeny Belatsky, said on Sunday a US-made HIMARS multiple rocket launcher was used in the strike, which killed four civilians and injured another five. At the time of the attack, repairs were being carried out on the bridge. Belatsky noted in a Telegram post, all of the people killed and injured in the strike were service technicians involved in the repairs. The Kiev authorities deliberately targeted a civilian infrastructure object, committing another crime against civilians, Belatsky said, adding that all of those who were injured were receiving the necessary medical assistance. The attack came just a day after Ukrainian troops hit a civilian hospital in the Luhansk People's Republic, and the strike, which also involved a HIMARS system yet again, killed 14 and left another 24 injured. The Russian Defense Ministry called a strike on the hospital an absolute grave war crime, which it is. Moscow's first deputy permanent representative to the UN, a guy called Polyansky, accused the US of being directly involved in that attack by supplying the Ukrainian forces with the weapons, ammunition, and reconnaissance data. And there is actually, George, a really important question. Does the US, or let's just say it was a Challenger tank from the UK, or maybe one of the F-16s from, I don't know, Poland, that the Ukrainian beggar chief Zelensky is asking for. But if any of these weapon systems actually kill Russian forces, is this not an attack by the US or the UK or the Polish on Russia directly? And will Russia eventually view this as actual direct acts of war, George?
Well, the thing with the HIMARS is this. It's the U.S., because it's such a precise system, when they got them, the U.S. stated very, very clearly that they approve every target. They approve the target. So when you're looking at the 14 dead at the hospital in LNR, that was approved by the U.S. government, by the U.S. military. So, yes, this is a war crime. Are they involved? You have the U.S. military approving strikes on civilians. Yes, they're involved. This is an outrage. It has been this way for the last 9 years, and now it's stepping up again. We've been 9 years for this. When is that line crossed? We'll say a dirty bomb. We'll say, you know, God knows. You know, you can bring any weapon you want into the theater, but can the Ukrainians use them? Not for the next 8 months or a year. It takes that long to learn how to use these weapon systems, regardless of what anyone else is saying. So what's going to happen? If they use them effectively, it's contractors. And that's the bottom line. So where's that line? Honestly, I don't know. Poland should have crossed this in 2014 when their troops were here. Mm-hmm. There were Polish military on the ground in the theater at that time. That obviously wasn't the case then. So we'll see what happens.
It's a really interesting point that use of a phrase there is, where is the line that should not be crossed? And the answer to that, I think, again, you know, I'm just some guy in Plymouth who studies the news. Nobody knows where that line is. And actually, that might be the most sort of dangerous part of this conflict, is that any one of these nations that we've just mentioned, and Russia, anyone who's got any sort of involvement in this conflict, can inadvertently cross that line at any time. We're using, for example, American rocket launchers that must have been deliberately targeted with the Americans' knowledge on a hospital. That could have been the line that should never have been crossed. It may be another incident that's similar to it, and another attack on a bridge, or it could be, I don't know, Polish troops deciding to go into the Ukraine or America. It could be any one of these things could potentially cross that line where this conflict explodes into something that the rest of the world just ain't ready for. Do you think that's a fair comment, that there isn't a red line actually physically drawn in the sand, and that at any moment, just even a really innocuous error or faux pas in terms of language or an accidental strike on another hospital could really, really make this conflict explode into what would be termed a third world war, George?
Well, I agree with you 100%. The only thing that's, you know, keeping that at bay right now is the amount of patience that Russia is using. And what I actually got a kick out of, and, you know, I was talking to someone today earlier about this. Now, the Kremlin is buying American weapons from the Taliban. You know, there's not enough time to train people up on these things. But it would be kind of an interesting turn of events if you saw Russians driving American tanks, American Apaches, American Humvees across the battlefield fighting the Ukrainians, driving Polish or German.
It would make for an interesting a piece of optics. And actually, what has happened to all that military equipment that we left in Afghanistan? You would think that the American enemies would be scrambling and offering quite a lot to the Taliban and their goat herd of friends for that equipment, because it's not really of any use to the Taliban. Do you think that could be a possibility? Right. Do you think the Russians have got their hands on that equipment?
Russia is talking about a deal right now.
Talking about
so,
a deal,
you know,
with...
that's why I'm saying, with the Taliban, for American equipment that Joe Biden left in Afghanistan. That's going on. That's ongoing right now. Now, what comes of it, and, you know, the reason behind it, I don't know. But that's why I made the point I did. It would make a really interesting headline. Ukrainians in M1A1 Abrams tanks attacked by, you know, Apache helicopters.
Or another Abrams
tank. yeah, exactly. That would make, I mean, you know, Joe Biden did this. Welcome to Biden's world. Here we go. But it's very, very low in the realm of possibility. Because again, you have to train on these things. You have to be able to maintain them. You have to, there's so much involved with heavy weapons that people, unless you've been exposed to it a little bit, it's hard to imagine. You know, for every tank, you've got 10 mechanics that are following it around, plus a fuel guy, plus the food guy, plus. And then you need combined weapon support. So you have other armored light vehicles. So you have infantry, you have air, you have air support, you have, and that's for a tank. And they all have to be trained on the same type of tactics. And that's just not going to work with the Abrams.
Yeah, I mean, Abrams tank I take a lot of, when I try to look into the Ukraine war, I listen to a lot of what Douglas McGregor is saying, and he is saying, it's quite a good tank, but it's a gas guzzler. It's not really suited to the environment. And as you've just said, requires a huge team of backup mechanics, engineers, support, etc., behind the scenes per tank. Of course, that's something that isn't mentioned in our mainstream media at all. It's, you know, we've in the UK, these tanks that are being sent to Ukraine, they are considered absolute game changers. And people buy this. It's quite laughable. But go back to this HIMARS strike. The mainstream media are not reporting on any of these incidents. And when they do, it's normally framed as a Russian attack on their own people, George.
Yeah, it's been that way for 9 years. And, you know, it got old after the first day, hearing about how your own people targeted themselves and their families. Yeah, okay, that makes a world of sense. But that's the way the media war runs. Uh-huh. And, you know, that's the shame that people actually listen to it instead of, you know, just using a little bit of critical thinking. Why would you do that? You wouldn't. Why would you attack your own neighborhood with heavy weapons? You know, it doesn't matter whether you get along with your neighbor or not. Are you set to kill him just to make a headline? The answer is no. It's always no. So it is what it is right now with the news. All right. We're going to go to a quick break. Darren, thanks so much for coming by today. I look forward to seeing you tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll be back tomorrow, George, and it'll be a non-Ukraine story tomorrow. So I'll try and throw something a bit out of the box towards you, George. So look forward to speaking to you tomorrow, mate.
Excellent. Have a great day. All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, I want to get back into Tyree Nichols a little bit. That's a big story. We'll see you in a few minutes.
Jeremy Nell on TNT Radio.
South Africa right now is experiencing scheduled rolling blackouts, and they are very bad. We're talking 8 to 10 hours per day of no electricity countrywide, and this has been intensified over the last 12 months. What that means is that getting off the grid obviously is a priority, but it's a slow process. It's a very expensive process. And when I was doing my show on, I think, Tuesday and Wednesday, I was running off an inverter. But the problem was that the exchange that was supplying my broadband internet, which basically supplies to my local area, it ran out of power because it also has battery backup. And when there are too many hours of blackouts, the exchanges don't get enough charge to their backup supply. And so everything goes down, and it affects our cell phone towers as well.
Sounds to me like your own country's declared war on you guys, and they're trying to shut everything down. I mean, it's very obvious to me, and I'm sure they're trying to do this all around the world.
Yeah, I think we are a test case for the World Economic Forum and the Sustainable Development Agenda and all that sort of thing, because there's no possible way that you can have scheduled rolling blackouts and then still blame it on maintenance.
Jeremy Nell on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Caution. You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country's all about.
TNT Radio.
Hey, I'm the voice of freedom. Welcome back. You're with George Eliason, and we're going to continue our discussion about Tyre Nichols a little bit. So we threw away political considerations for the moment. The whole, you know, racist thing is out the window. And you can't look at it as black on black either, because that's just ridiculous. It is. It's ridiculous. So what's the next question? Now, we have police officers that are doing this. Two unarmed guy. Now, he got up and ran. Well, what was he running from? Well, he was getting beat up. Now, there is parts of this we don't know, but this does no way justify the murder of a young man ending his life, especially this way. These are police. And, you know, honestly, when I was a kid, when police were convicted of crimes, especially violent crimes, and sent to prison, they were treated a certain way because the amount of authority you have as a police officer is immense. It is immense. You're holding a weapon in your hand legally, and you can legally shoot people, even if they don't have a weapon. In some cases, it is justified. Yes, you heard me right. But this was not one of them. Tyre's race doesn't mean squat in this case. He's the young man that died. And any of these other things that put it on that or put a political slant on it, you know, honestly, it's not even about doing this man justice, okay? Because this is all our society that we're talking about. Does this happen? Yes. The next question, is it systemic? Now, this is where it gets political, because the Democrats want you to believe, yes, this is systemic. This is across America. Black people are getting killed everywhere. Well, we're already throughout race. So what is it? If it's not race, who's getting killed? Who's getting beat up? And then is it systemic? According to the actual numbers, believe it or not, white men get beat up more than black men. It's just when you talk in terms of percentages, that's where it evens out, the real numbers. But you have to look at the real demographic. Poor neighborhoods. That's the demographic. You see, it's not black or white or anything. When you get up to the middle class, if blacks were being put down, then the black middle class should be much smaller than their percentage of the population. And quite frankly, it's equal. Whites, blacks, Hispanics, and Asians. Middle class is where it's the barometer for equality. And the exact percentage of the population populates the middle class. If blacks are 18% of the population of the United States, according to this theory, they'd be 18% of the middle class. And guess what? They are. by sheer numbers, more white people get beat up and killed by cops than blacks. By percentages, they're the same. The differences in the number of percentages is the difference in population. Where this becomes a big issue for media is because, unfortunately, poor blacks are crowded into inner city neighborhoods. So it's all one urban mass instead of spread out over different townships like white people are, or, you know, like maybe other races. It's just the way the demographics worked out. So who complains about police brutality the most? You get a kick out of this. It's the middle class guys that don't suffer it. Middle class, whiny middle class guys that make a lot of money, don't like getting pulled over or being talked sharp to. Yeah. Who complains the least? Poor black guys. Does it mean that they're suffering the least? No, they're suffering the same as poor white guys or poor Asian guys or poor Hispanic guys. And the second class of people that fall into this whole thing are poor women. Yeah. So what do we have here? Do we have black, white, Hispanic being singled out? No. But we do have poverty. Who was this, the strike force that part of this group of officers belonged to? It was the Scorpions, violent crime in poor neighborhoods. Now, they should not have been stopping, making traffic stops to begin with. It's not their detail. And quite frankly, you know, you look at, well, a cop's a cop's a cop. Well, no, it's not. Look at your job. Now put your job in a different context, whatever it is. Okay? It's like saying, okay, you're a construction worker. Okay, and then say, okay, well, go up on top of that building and tie the iron together. I'm not going up there. I don't know how to do that. Different police have different jobs, you know, and that's just the way it works. These particular guys are a peach. But is it systemic? See, that's the question we have to get to. No. And when you look at the real data, the real demographics, you find out that this actually happens to a very, very minute population. And that most of the people, and that does not include Tyree Nichols, most of the people killed, whether they're armed or not, posed an immediate threat to the police officers. You know, we're talking about what they would call a clean kill. Justified. Now, with police, it's like everywhere else. In any other profession, I don't care what it is you do, there's always at least one in the crowd. And, you know, that's a person that they wreck your reputation for your company to everyone else. They'll do such off-the-wall, screwed-up stuff and endanger people and not care. Now, when you group a bunch of these people together, and I guarantee that at some of these cops, if you left them on their own, they would have done it. But you have part of what's going on is crowd psychology, and think of it as like the Stanford experiment. You have people in authority doing stuff and saying stuff that are absolutely wrong, hazardous, murderous, and everybody will go along with it because they are authoritative. So it could be someone that they thought they should respect, like, hey, wow, he's in the Scorpions. He's in the Scorpion unit. They're doing this. And not having the moral fiber to say, no, this is wrong, stop it. Well, guess what, buddy? Not having that moral fiber, you're going to be tried for murder, spend the rest of your life in jail, and just because you were there and did nothing deserve it, because you had the authority to stop it. You had the authority of a police officer. But when people talk about this being systematic, system-wide, the answer is hell no. Hell no. You look at the United States, you've got what, you got to be heading on like 330 million people. 18,000 police departments. How often do you hear about this? And it's not a media soundbite that's wrong on the facts. You look at 2020, every single one of those men that BLM hanged up as a hero, including George Floyd, were petty criminals. They were petty criminals. Floyd died because of the drugs he was on. And that's the bottom line with it. Floyd was dead that day, unless he went to the hospital, like right before he had to scrape with the police. Floyd was dead. But, you know, we are where we are with it. And that's it. But the flip side to Tyre Nichols is, are we going to punish or question all these good police that are out there protecting society? They started defunding the cops. How did that work out for you? Look at New York. Well, the police don't go in certain neighborhoods anymore because they're defunded. You have to rent your own security company. So now they come in with, guess what, assault weapons. Who ends up physically responsible in court if they kill somebody? You hired the guy. Well, they have a license. Tell that to the people that were killed. They're going after your store because you killed somebody. And that's even if you're right. That's if you're right. Because you don't legally have the policing authority. Now, should the police departments clean up scum like the men that killed Tyre Nichols? You better damn well believe it. Damn well believe it. But when you take away the funding, when you take away the training, when you try to turn them into social workers to begin with, you're going to end up with more of this. Some of it accidental because of that they weren't trained. And others because, well, the good guys are just going to get frustrated and leave. Why would you, the men and women, is what I'm talking about, why do you put your life on the line out there trying to protect society when you're getting spit at? When you yourself can't get the equipment, the tools you need to do the job, when there's not enough funding to give you backup, which is what's going on in New York right now. Cops gets told, you know, we need you to respond to this call and this, and you know it's a gang, or you know it's a very violent situation, and there's no backup coming. You're on your own. Well, I've got three clips, and there's like 20 of them. Yeah, this doesn't work well for me. I'm not going. And we're at a point in the breakdown of society where that turned out to be okay. Not that they won't go in that situation. Now, we're not talking about that situation in the school where you had the lone gunman and freaking 20 cops that were just, you know, honestly, they should have just clung under their mama's skirts that day and let the parents go in. What a disgusting mess that was. lack of training to fund the cops. There you go. Turn them into social workers. And we'll be having more situations like that. Cops that do this, though, investigate them, try them, convict them, and then let the justice play out. Back when I was a kid, if you were a cop and you were convicted of a crime, you were treated in prison a certain way because you had authority and a public trust, and you broke that. You broke that. And now you're one of us. Bada bing, bada boom. That's just the way the ball bounces. So we'll see how that pans out. Now, in terms of the so-called protest for this, now this is where it gets very political. The Democratic Party finally found their poster boy in Tyre Nichols. You see, they couldn't get away with those other guys in 2020. That just didn't flush. It didn't flush. They were criminals. And this young man certainly was not. So, breaking out Antifa again. Antifa is the militant wing of the Democratic Party. And that should scare the hell out of you. They're members of the Pirate Party, which answers to the Pirate Party worldwide in Germany, which is part of the Green Party and Annalena Baerbock. Yeah, the idiot German. This woman, I mean, honestly, I think she dribbles her milk when she drinks. Seriously, this, yeah, hey, yeah, you picked the right political leaders. And Anonymous is part of this group also. So what are they? Just another group of fascist rabble. And they should not be allowed under any circumstances to tear apart any more cities. And it's a shame and a disgrace that they are. And that's just the way I feel about it. The counterpart, and it is the counterpart in Ukraine, started doing this in 2014. They're called Right Sector. They worship Stepan Bandera. His politics are the same as Antifa's. They grew out of the same mold. And there they are. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about a new and exciting twist in the DNC hack. This is TNT Talk Radio. I'm George Eliason, and we'll see you in a few minutes.
You want to eat bugs? How about Bill Gates-funded lab-grown meat, in quotes? Yes, the great food reset has arrived.
From Washington, D.C., this is the Morano Minute with your host, TNT Radio's Mark Morano.
We're saved. The climate is smiling at us. Lab-grown meat harvested in massive steel vats edges closer to federal approval and U.S. dinner plates. Don't worry, the EU is also approving human consumption of worms and crickets. You will eat Bill Gates' lab-grown meat and bugs and be happy. The Climate Agenda Great Reset goal is simple. Collapse modern high-yield agriculture and meat production to meet net-zero climate goals. As these shortages and prices skyrocket on meat and other foods, it's much easier to push insect eating and lab-grown meat to the public. It's a culinary future that will happen only if we allow it. It's time for the Great Reject. Don't eat the bugs. This is Mark Morano for the Morano Minute on TNT Radio.
Challenging the consensus and debunking the narrative. This is Viewpoint.
The Caesar Rodney Election Research Institute, CRERI, investigated Zuckerberg's favored nonprofits, the Center for Technology and Civic Life, CTCL, and the Center for Election Innovation and Research, CEIR, and found nearly 99% of CTCL grants of $1 million or more in the battleground states of Arizona, Georgia, Michigan, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Texas, and Virginia went to cities and counties which Biden was certified as winning. In some places, the funds gave Democrat-leaning areas a more than 10-to-1 advantage in election resources. A grant program for 5 Wisconsin cities allowed these Democrat strongholds to spend roughly $47 per voter, compared to $4 to $7 per voter in traditionally Republican areas of the state, the Amistad Project, an election watchdog, revealed. Analysis by other groups like Influence Watch and the Foundation for Government Accountability found similar discrepancies.
You're with George Eliason on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Yes, it's me again. As that case that we were talking about pans out, I'll try to keep you up to date on it. There is no winner in this thing, and a lot has been lost. And my heart goes out to the family, and as should yours. And the last thing that any of us should do is make it a political story. It's a horror. It goes beyond tragedy. Now, the next story I want to talk about is, it changes gears quite a bit. It's going back to 2016 and it's going to 2024 at the same time. It's just crazy like that. Vladislav Klyushkin was arrested. He was deported, taken to Boston for insider trading. And the headline reads like this: exclusive extravagant wedding photo show Putin pal 41 now jailed in Boston for insider trading case. Russian tech tycoon Klyushkin 41 could hold the key to unlocking the secrets to both Moscow's alleged hacking of the 2016 election, and he may also have inside knowledge of the 2018 Novichok poisoning in Salisbury, England, of the double agent Sergei Skripal and his daughter Yulia. Oof. Before being held in Switzerland, Klyushkin worked with a fellow accused, Ivan Yermakov, who's 35, seen as having been a GRU officer, GRU, and Nikolai Rumyantsev, 33, at M13, which is the guy's company, an information tech company based in Moscow. They and two other men are charged alongside him in the Boston case. Holy shit, that's a mouthful. So let me get this straight. Now, we're talking about the DNC hack here, but I thought Mueller and his infinite wisdom crucifying, all of MAGA, Donald Trump, everything, turning the world upside down, destroying a presidency, solved it. No, he didn't. They actually, in the end, the absolute whimper that you didn't hear about the Mueller case ended with this headline: DOJ drops charges against Russian trolls after they dared demand evidence in U.S. court. Any questions? After all that, that's how the Mueller investigation ended. Now they're bringing it up again and saying, this guy might know who did what. And they're bringing him in for insider trading. Now, what they're charging him with is that he has a lot of money. He has a yacht. He has this. He has that. Look at his wedding. He drives a Porsche. He must be dirty. He owns a tech company. Tech guys make money. Ask Elon Musk. That's the way it works around the world, kids. He got a medal from Vladimir Putin a few years ago for service he did for his country. People get that in the United States and everywhere else too. But because they couldn't do anything with the people that Mueller investigated, now they get these guys. But, and Mueller mention them. Please. The servers that Mueller mentioned he used in his indictment belonged to another Russian company. And the servers, the actual servers themselves, were being used from a group that was in Kiev, Ukraine. Period, the end. All stop. I have the proof of it. Now, we talk about the Fancy Bear hack, and they want to know who Fancy Bear is. Well, I did an article, I don't know, 3 or 4 years back. When all this was up in the air, the FBI actually went to a Moscow jail, interviewed a prisoner there that worked for the Ukrainian crew in Kiev, and said they would give him a house, a salary, they would, you know, an allowance, citizenship, all this stuff, set him up in business if he said that Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin in cahoots told him to hack the DNC. That's the story. And quite frankly, it was the logical one, especially after everything that happened. Never in the news other than one place. Now we have this whole Fancy Bear thing. I get a kick out of that. You know, this guy that named it Fancy Bear, he knew exactly who the hackers were the whole time he was talking to them. And as a matter of fact, the only people that had the signature tools for Fancy Bear, Cozy Bear, were Dmitry Alperovich and his Ukrainian buddies, Ukrainian hacking group. Yeah, I'm not kidding. Now, the Ukrainian group split, and there was a Russian component of that. The Russian component thought they got a great job offer in Moscow and they could just traipse back into Moscow and, you know, no one would care. When it was a trap, they were arrested, charged with treason. When Vladimir Putin offered Donald Trump, the hacker and the server, for Bill Browder, he was very serious. That happened, but no one took it seriously. Would have been a great trade. Get rid of the evil guy, answer a lot of questions. Win-win. Now, we know that it was this Ukrainian group because an uninterested party, it's actually a security company that notes hacks going on around the world, noted a very, very interesting one. And this hack was reported they called the group, it was a company called ESET LLC, and they did a report called En route with SEDNET Part 1 Approaching the Target Version 1.0 October 2016 by ESET LLC. And what they actually recorded was the hack of Fancy Bear. Not Fancy Bear hacking somebody hacking Fancy Bear with Fancy Bear tools. What was retrieved is the interesting part. It was the second part of what's known as the Surkov files. Supposedly, the Ukrainians, it's the way the story ended up. The Ukrainians hacked the Russian government and they got a secretary of Surkov who didn't have any real information anyway, but it was a great hack. Love us for it, baby. Send us money. Well, the hack was actually done by a group called Sheltai Baltai, who was part of the Ukrainian group. And it's Ukraine Cyber Alliance and Cyber Junta. Now, they would only release half of the information they had. And the Ukrainians got really upset about it. So they hacked Sheltai-Baltai for it using fancy bear tools, which were noticed. Yeah, only people with them is Fancy Bear and Dmitry Alperovich. And yet Fancy Bear ended up getting hacked. Now, 2 days later, the second half of the Surkov files are sent to the Atlantic Council for verification. And according to RFERL, the leader of Ukraine's cyber alliance, RUH8, or RU8, credits mostly cyber junta with the Surkov email theft, saying it was not the result of spear phishing scam, but rather what he describes cryptically as a special software. He claims the malware allowed cyber junta not only to retrieve Surkov's email, but to take the entire Russian presidential administration system under their control, which was garbage. And they gathered information right from the computers. What they gathered information from were the same servers that Donald Trump was looking for. It was Sheltai-Baltai that did it. Sheltai-Baltai hacker, Alice, was actually responsible for the DNC. And we'll get to that again in a second. We've talked about it before. But so we have the tools that only Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear have being used against Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear by the other side of Fancy Bear and Cozy Bear. And they were all in Kiev working for Ukraine. What does this sound like to you so far? This is documented, people. This isn't theory. This isn't anything. This is what's documented. Yeah, here we go, right? Now, how did that hack set up? And this is the most important part, and it's the most unbelievable freaking thing. Unbelievable. Why is it unbelievable? Because it just makes this sense. It just makes this much sense. Now, you had the whole, during that time frame, and you remember after it, you had this whole thing about, was it a hack, was it a leak? Was it a hack, was it a leak? Well, I investigated a hack. Bill Binney and company investigated a leak. And I told people, if you want to know about the leak, talk to them. I'm investigating the hack. Different thing. Because the leak happened. And as a reaction to that, and this is from the book, Shattered Inside Hillary Clinton's Doomed Campaign. At the same time her aides were creating loyalty scores, Clinton instructed a trusted aide to access the campaign server, download messages sent and received by top staffers. That was the hacked information they were looking at, the stuff that was being released, that was leaked. She wants somebody to get in there and find out who was doing this and what was done. And she had a trusted advisor, which would be Alexandra Chalupa, who had her security people look into it, who had these special tools that probably came from Vault 7. See, they weren't supposed to have these tools. Ukraine didn't have them. They were given to them. And they wanted to do it quick and please Hillary Clinton. And there's your hack. They used state-level tools on a DNC server, recorded it, and then they created this huge mess out of it. And bada bing, bada boom, I have all the details, but we're at game over. It's solved. There it is. And yet we get this whole big Mueller deal that they're starting over again, when it was the Ukrainians that did it for Hillary Clinton at her behest. It was actually an administrative procedure from inside the Clinton campaign. I'm George Eliason. This is TNT Talk Radio. And I mean, that was the world of bizarre. We'll see you tomorrow. You have a great evening. Bye-bye for now.